nice yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So we have a great show lined up today, Conor. We have nothing to do with me and you, of course, who are going to start off the show with a little bit of football news. We've David Fitzgerald coming up on the show. It was a good interview I did yesterday. And Johnny Pilkington, whose Laker Gael is on tonight on TG Cahir at 9:30. Johnny Pilkington is one of my favourite players. I was a teenager in the 90s, so I have very, very fond memories of those years. I tried to get Johnny onto the show during the last lockdown when I was doing tribute shows. And he politely declined. But I suppose the call of Laker Gael, Conor, is probably something that I can't really compete with.
Yeah. In fairness, I can't argue with that, Willie. I mean, there's a track record of that's all the legendary figures have gone through Laker Gael rather than your tribute shows. But the key is once you build up the tribute shows, Willie, and once you have a bank them put together, then you can go to Johnny Pilk and you can say, here, listen, I'm bigger than Laker Gael now, so come on my show. So
they'll be ringing me up. Conor. That's the way it works. So we like to start these shows with a little bit of news as to where we stand. I suppose there is a little bit. It's not really news, Conor. It's pretty much what we kind of knew already. So the COVID-19 advisory group met on Monday and they've decided against allowing collective training at the moment. They're going to meet again on February 15th. So, like, I mean, I was told that the rule of thumb kind of is when schools go back, inter-county teams can go back. So I think that's where they're looking at. I think the government are going to start filtering schools back in the middle of February. And, you know, definitely by next March the 5th, we'll have all teams training, potentially before that.
Yeah, just listening to Micheál Martin there earlier on this week, he said that schools and construction were the priority. So you'd imagine that the GAA technically can proceed now because it's elite, but it looks like it's going off the guidance of the government as well, and that's not going to happen until there's some sort of easing of restrictions, even if that's just in relation to schools and construction. So I suppose the one thing is there is, I think we spoke about it a couple of weeks ago as well. And like saying that, you know, if you're optimistic about it, there is a sign of it returning eventually. So that, like, hopefully by that stage and hopefully, but I think if they don't, they want to have them back. They're still saying the commencement of competitions by the end of March is a definite possibility. So if they're thinking of it's a definite possibility, they have to have them back training by the end of February because there has to be a 4-week window. They've committed to that. So
yeah.
It's a light in the horizon, so hopefully we'll have a clearer picture in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I'd love to go back to the county by county approach. Like, Laois had only 6 new cases yesterday. Like, it's under control in Laois. Why can't the Laois inter-county team train outside? Do you know what I mean? When you see the national numbers, it can be, you know, give a certain impression. And then you see other counties like Kerry, they're doing fantastically well, you know? I think we scrapped that county by county idea way too early. Like, I mean, it didn't work out too well for Laois because we were stuck on a 3-week ban because we had, like, I don't know, in a full week, we had something like 50 cases. Like, you know, like when you look back on that, those kind of lockdowns back last summer, they were absolutely mental. You know, like, I mean, it's a much more serious situation. It has been for the last 6 weeks. But I think in Laois, we're coming out of it now. I don't know, maybe I just like to go back. Maybe each county could then potentially, you know, police themselves, if you know what I mean, rather than this obsession with someone going to bloody Lanzarote.
Yeah. I imagine that the GAA are thinking that the problem with letting counties police themselves is that if they would fear then that there'd be breaches in other counties and that their case for being strong on other counties would be weakened if they let the counties where it's under control train away. Do you know what I mean? Like, I haven't thought about that in any great detail, Willie, so I don't want to get into it too much, but hopefully, going on what we were saying a couple of weeks ago, that we will be in a situation where everybody, and it's not just, you know, individual counties where it's under control, will be in a position where they'll be able to be back training by the end of February, start of March.
Talking about breaches and stuff like that, Jesus, the GAA have come down pretty hard on Cork and Down. 12-week suspension for their managers. Now, I suppose in a way, like, you'd say, fair enough, it is their managers that organise this session. I'd probably agree that it's the manager, not the players, who are following direction. You know, you don't want to be seen as to turn down a training session. That's not what players do. They go out and do what they're told. They were training on a beach and in a school, again, outside. Again, the optics are not good. You know, the counties involved say that all safety precautions were, you know, adhered to, etc. Again, 12-week suspension. That's a fair old suspension for Paddy Talley and Ronan McCarthy.
Yeah, and to be honest, well, just in my opinion, anyway, I don't have a huge amount of sympathy in either case, and like the reason for that is that if you just think back to at the time, right? So like, listen, they have their excuses. Like Down said that it was just a one-off gathering where they were, you know, handing out programs and stuff like that for the players to follow when they were in lockdown. And Cork will say that they followed, you know, they breached no guidelines, technically breached no guidelines. They followed the medical advice to the letter of the law. But they came at a time just after Christmas where the situation had started to badly escalate out of control. Yeah, and not only that, but there was a fairly strong letter issued by the GA to counties that they are not under any circumstances to train collectively. Now, you know, they can, Paddy Daly and Ronan McCarthy can talk about the technicalities, but they met up and Cork certainly trained collectively. What Down did on that night, I don't know. And like the thing is, why they can say that they've maybe been hard done by is that they've been done under a law that has been breached loads of times in the past. You know, when counties aren't supposed to train collectively, they've trained collectively. But like, you know, the line has to be drawn somewhere. And just given the circumstances of where Ireland was as a society with COVID when the breaches happened, I don't have any real issue with the GAA coming down hard. And if they're to set some sort of example, if they want to prevent this sort of thing from happening in the future, unfortunately, Paddy Talley and Ronan McGarty are the ones that bore the brunt of it in this case. But I don't really have any issue with it.
Maybe 3 months, a little bit too much, I would say. But like, I mean, at the same time, it definitely sends out a message to not be messing with the restrictions. But Darren O'Hagan was tweeting saying he was obviously Down player. He's Down captain. I'm pretty sure Paddy Talley should be celebrated for his outstanding service to the GAA. Instead, he's being deliberately targeted by centralised media leaks and press briefings to attack his good character. He has guided and mentored Down footballers on and off the field through unprecedented times. There's no doubt about that. If somebody is going to be scapegoated, I think that's unfair. I think Paddy Talley can be celebrated as a great man for Down football, but also, you know, let that not get in the way of the fact that he broke the rules and he's been suspended. A little bit too long for my liking, but anyways, you know, we'll see. It'll probably be this month and they'll miss the National League. So however way to sort that out. I was really disappointed in the Independent there this week. Colm Keyes had a piece and he'd be fairly well connected in Croke Park, as you know, a lot of the journalists did have good leads in there. Mm. And like, I mean, he's talking about that, you know, the way, right, this year there's going to be a Congress to decide, and anyone that follows the show knows that this is what's going to happen this year, that there's a special Congress this year, and they're going to decide on three options. They're going to decide on a league-based championship, they're going to decide on a real stupid four provinces where counties are put into the different provinces. That, I don't see that getting any support, and the status quo is another one. And, like, I mean, most people thought, like, you know, we'll go through just a version of the championship this year, and then next year, you know, when everything's, Jesus, I know we said last year that this year everything would be back to normal, Conor, but surely to God, I don't know if things aren't back to normal next year, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm emigrating, and that's it. You won't have to listen to me anymore. Anyways, what's going to happen now, according to Colm Keyes, is that next year he's saying that instead of going to this new championship structure, which will be great and exciting, well, depending if it gets voted in, that they're going to go along with the Super 8s in 2022 because they want to fulfill the 3-year mandate that the Super 8s were for 3 years. And obviously they went for 2 years, and then we have 2 years of disruption, and they want to finish out a championship structure that is not popular and that they want to change. And what is the point of doing that?
Well, so I was reading this piece, William, and I'm just trying to read this right, because there's a line in it that says, so it speaks about the completion of the Super 8s for the third year, but it also says, however, a vote to bring in the split season with July conclusions to an All-Ireland final will take place at a virtual Congress, and if carried, is likely to be in place by 2022.
Well, so you see, you can do a split season with the Super 8s, I'm sure, as well. Like, that's a separate thing.
So they want the split season and they want the Super, like, they could, we could be looking at next year, we could be looking at a split season with the Super 8s in it as well, which just, to me, like, complicates matters completely. I mean, I don't know, like, to me anyway, the Super 8s were a novel in their first year. People were getting, you know, seemed to be getting a little bit tired of it in the second year. And given everything that's gone on since, like, I'd nearly completely forgotten about the Super 8s as a concept. Yeah. I think a lot of people had. And to me, it'd just be a huge step back. There was a mood for change in the championship anyway, and it has only been accelerated by everything that's gone on in the last year. That change is possible, you know, and change is possible at a relatively short period of time as well, given what we've done in the last year. So to be going back at the Super 8s for a third year, nearly just to pay lip service to complete it, yeah, you know, for the sake of completing it, seems like a complete step back to me. Whereas, as you said, you could be starting the championship with flip the season on its head, which is the seems to be the most popular option. You could be looking at doing that in 22 with a fresh start, as opposed to having to wait until 2023 and finishing the Super 8s for the sake of it. Just seems ridiculous to me.
Yeah, no, it does. And hopefully they'll change their mind on that, because a lovely new fresh start next year maybe would put all this bloody nightmare year and a half, or could be 2 years by the time it's over, by the way they talk, you would put us behind us. But anyways, Armagh have had some change. They've had a lot of change, actually, to their backroom team. The latest has been the addition of Kieran McKeever, who has been a pundit on this show plenty of times. So that's a good appointment for Kieran McGeaney. Obviously, they'd have a good relationship as, you know, friends. He is in replacing Paddy McKeever and John Toll. And we know Kieran Donaghy's in there as well. So Kieran Donaghy and Kieran McKeever replace Paddy McKeever and John Toll. Kieran McGeaney's still looking for a number two. Jim McCorry, he stepped down for personal reasons, apparently. I was just reading about, because I don't think we talked about this at the time, Kieran Donaghy's role. He was saying, I'll be working with the forwards and defensive stuff, probably bringing my basketball background and a small bit of experience on the GAA pitch to the setup. And apparently he's up the north there with work, and or he's up in Dublin. He stays a couple of nights and he's going to tip up. He must know Kieran McGeaney. I was kind of scratching my head wondering what will that role be. I'm thinking of Andrew Mernon, you know, in at full forward, and can McGeaney or can Donaghy give him a few tips, what kind of ball to give him. And then I was wondering, you know, Armagh are desperate at they're not great at breaking through teams that have bodies back, and I keep calling Kieran Donaghy Kieran McGeaney. There's so many Kierans. There's a Kieran McKeever, Kieran McGeaney, and Kieran Donaghy. I'm getting confused here. Could Donaghy potentially, you know, do a little bit of basketball moves and, you know, things that Jo helped Dublin with? And then he says he's going to help on the defensive stuff, and I'm wondering what the hell is he doing that for? And maybe there's some basketball defensive stuff as well that he could go in there, like shuffling across to the side, the ball is coming down, etc, you know, all this kind of technical stuff that's a far cry from the 90s when I grew up playing GAA, Connor.
Just on the defensive stuff, well, it's something I was thinking about with Armagh, like, who are a team that tried to play they tried to play an attacking philosophy, but like the best teams that have attacking philosophy, to me anyway, also have they defend very well on the front foot. They defend from the front, basically. Like, you know, I think there was stats about the Mayo full forward line and how much ball they turn over. You can see that's true of Dublin as well, obviously. And it's something I don't associate with Armagh. Maybe that's being unfair to them, but I don't associate their forward line with being, you know, having relentless intensity on, you know, when they're pressing from the front or trying to tackle from the front. And maybe that's something that Kieran Donaghy can help with, especially with basketball. Like, anytime I've heard Kieran Donaghy use basketball analogies in relation to GAA, been very impressed with how he talks about it. Like, it's very interesting stuff. And I imagine a lot to do with spatial awareness. And in attack, it's just like, Armagh need to be, you talked about their struggle to get past teams with bodies back. Sometimes, especially I'm thinking of Roscommon in the league this year and Donegal in the championship, haven't been patient enough to wait for the right option. And like, basketball and attack is a lot about that, you know. So you'd imagine Donny will be able to be at that. But I don't think a freshening up of the Armagh backroom team is no harm, because I know, Willie, you've been a cheerleader for Armagh for the last few years, but to me, when it comes to the crunch, they've always flattered to deceive in their biggest games in the last few years. So they're not changing manager, you know, but there will be a fresh approach with Kieran McGeever and Kieran Donaghy in. I don't think that'll do them any harm.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, I have cheerleaded Armagh and Kildare, and I want to officially say that I'm off those two bandwagons. I've given up hope with them. I need to find a couple of new teams to, you know, back up and have faith in and defend, because I ain't doing it for Armagh and Kildare anymore. Unless they really pull it out of the fire this year and pull me back in, you know, I've given up on the two of them. David Goff has been talking this week, and he's been talking about motivation and a bit on the lockdowns. And he was saying it's not been easy. Each lockdown has brought a different level of anxiety around when are we going to get back out? And it's hard to stay motivated and to stay fit. Unlike inter-county teams, we don't have the facilities to meet the same way twice a week or when normally normally sort of resumes. He said, so even having to train on our own is nothing new to us, but with no prospect of matches in sight and smaller number of matches, it's been very difficult for referees to stay motivated. I can totally relate, David. Jesus. Every January, I always get out of shape at Christmas, obviously, having a few pints. And even in the lead up to Christmas, the dark evenings, every single January, I'm back in the gym. I get back in shape. I'm more positive. I feel great. I don't drink as much. And this year has just been like, what kind of a January is this, Connor? We can't even do that. So I've just continued my Christmas kind of routine on in true January. And it's absolutely no good for your physical or mental health. And I completely know where David's coming from. I tried for the first week of January to go training, and then it's raining and the gyms are closed and you're outside. And I'm like, I just give up halfway through and I go, what am I doing here?
Yeah, I think somebody said to me that, because I did it last year, I think somebody said to me this first week of January, are you doing dry January? I'm like, I am not doing dry January. Yeah. This, no way. But like again, just from an individual point of view, I get where he's coming from, because especially like if people are working from home, for example, you can't, unless you have adequate facilities or you live in an area that's well lit up, it's not as if you can go like out for even a jog in the evenings because it's too dark. And then just to try and like you're looking at, again, unless you have a shed that you can kit out your little gym or something like that, you know, you rely on doing some exercises in a small room or anything like that.
Yeah, but Connor, you think of even training with Kilchie Mott on a wet, cold winter night, you'd fancy not going. And that's what a manager going to come down on you. Imagine actually how individuals, especially when they get it to their, you know, mid-30s or 40s where they're not with a team, it's practically impossible to motivate yourself.
Yeah, no, completely. Like I would say on that, Woolly, that like the prospect even of a training in a wet and cold night actually appeals to me at the moment, because I haven't been able to get out of the house. Besides, you know, it's mad how the stuff that you normally would have dread, you'd actually look forward to it this time. Yeah. But that's, you know, like I completely understand. I completely understand where David Goff is coming from. Like obviously they have to have a kind of a real big handle on their own personal fitness, because as he said, it's not as if, well, certainly I imagine club referees train together to a certain degree. I know they have, I'm pretty sure they do in Mayo, you know, when things are normal, but like inter-county referees, it's not as if they're in a position to gather and train collectively and, you know, motivate themselves to keep them in shape. So definitely understand where he's coming from. You just have to wait till the evenings are a bit brighter and do those 5K time trials that were in vogue there around March.
Oh, yeah. In fairness to David Goff, just don't worry about it, David. You don't have to mark anyone. You don't have to complain. Just go between the 265s, you know, and stop blowing for those off the ball pulling of jerseys. You won't have to run all the way down for that free then. So just, you know, use your experience, adapt your refereeing style and just stand around the middle. That's all he has to do. He was actually talking about the TMOs and he's in favour. He says it would be great help to referees to be able to review incidents on screens, on monitors at the halfway line or in Croke Park, where we have the two large screens. Now, Croke Park will not show anything on those large screens. Anyone that's been in a match in Croke Park, it's incredibly frustrating that they won't show incidents. Sometimes you think watching a match in Croke Park, would I be better off watching this at home where I can actually see what happened there? And you're asking everyone, did you see that? Anyways, he says, purely because the decisions are so vital and the teams are training so hard, we don't want to make the wrong decision and we want to be best informed to make those decisions. He says, I do like the idea rugby has where there's a TMO and there's a discussion. Everyone can hear the discussion, watch the same replay and hear the referee talk through the process of what's happening, etc. And like, I mean, I do think that would be the best way of doing it. I'm thinking of like something extreme, like Joe Sheridan's goal against Loud. Like a goal like that can't happen. But then I'm thinking of, say for example, Cora Finn's unbelievable hand pass goal, right? Like, say for example, the referee, you know, they start losing a run of themselves with this and they start looking back, did he actually make a striking action on one of those hand passes? Or did he take five steps instead of four? And technically, can we rule this brilliant goal out? Do you know what I mean, Connor? Because I think, like, referees will, by nature, think, right, you know, I have the TMO. If I get something like this wrong, I'll be absolutely lynched. And they might be going to this all the time. Like, I mean, it's hard to know whether I'm in favour of wanting this to come in for the Joe Sheridan incident. Now, I'm not saying the Cara Finn, any of the Cara Finn is true, but I'm just giving that as an example.
Yeah, so I was about to maybe point to the example of VAR in football, for example, and I was thinking that, like, well, outside of handballs and offsides, I don't really mind VAR an awful lot, to be honest, because I think you quickly get used to it. And if it means that the right decision is going to be made, well, then fair enough. And I was thinking that maybe, well, the likes of handballs and offsides wouldn't apply to GAA, but then you make the point there that depending on how finicky they want to get, they could go back and review those incidents. And that would spoil it completely, because David Goff mentions rugby, but like TMOs, you know, they work naturally in rugby because rugby is so stop-start anyway. Do you know what I mean? It's like the big worry about TMO in GA, for example, would it disrupt the flow of the game? And there would be huge potential there if they were to get too finicky about it. How they would do it, but if there were some protocols in place to say that it's only when, let's say, only when the TMO, after reviewing an incident like Joe Sheridan, for example, then buzzes David Goff and he goes, listen, you have to go back and have a look here because it's patently obvious that there's been a massive decision made that's wrong and needs review. But that's, you know, that's easier said than done, that you could, you know, draw a line in the sand to say, well, this is the only thing we review and we don't review anything else. So I like it in theory, but I would be very worried about how it would potentially disrupt the flow of the game.
Yeah, no, I'd be very wary. I'd be very wary. And obviously, the big crime in the Joe Sheridan goal was not giving Loud a replay. You know, obviously, they got it terribly wrong at the time, but that was absolutely desperate that they didn't get a replay for that. So there was no justice done in that one at all. I don't know. I'd be leaning against the TMO in GEA, if I'm being honest, because like there's small technical, we know the steps. We know some people take the piss out of the steps, but if you're between 4 and 6 steps, you know, nobody ever gives out about that. We've seen occasions where people get away with 12 bloody steps, and that's outrageous. But like, I mean, if a goal was disallowed because some fella took 4 or 6 steps in the build-up, sometimes it can be very, very frustrating in rugby where you see a brilliant try and it's called back and it's disallowed for a desperately little feckin' technical issue that was a good bit back. It's like, that's just boring, you know, at that stage. And that is with a really stop-start type of game like rugby. You're right on that. Talking about motivation, Conor, one man that likes to keep himself busy is Davy Fitzgerald. He has a new show on RT called Davy's Toughest Team, and that's on every Monday night, or for the next, it's on last Monday night and on for the next 3 Monday nights. It comes the night after his other show, Ireland's Fittest Family, which is on Sunday nights. And Davy joins us on the line now. We can't keep you off the telly, Davy.
Yeah, well, sir, listen, I didn't last long in the championship this year, so I'm trying to make up for it. So I'm getting in my other parts there now. It's something different, Cullum, and very, very happy and proud of the lads and how they came across the last day. It isn't easy to go on a show like that publicly and do it, you know?
Yeah. So, like, I mean, it's running for 3 more weeks, is it, Davy?
Yeah, we've 3 more weeks of it. I can remember we started filming in early 2020, and I think we might have finished in August last year with lockdowns, with every bits and pieces. It took a while, so we managed to get 4 shows out of it. But I just hope that it can make a small difference to the lads and maybe make a small difference to people looking at us, that this is what's out there. This is real life for certain people.
And I think there's a footballer from Kildare on it who might be used to, you know, being shouted at and stuff like that in GAA dress rooms. How did the other lads react to your ways?
Yeah, well, I think you might see a bit of a difference if watching the next 3 shows. Even dealing with the teams, I'd like to think it isn't all shouting. There's a time and a place, Cullum.
Yeah.
There's a time and a place for that. There's a time and a place for trying to get a decision your way, but there's also trying to understand the individuals and trying to get the best out of them, and maybe that might be the complete opposite. And maybe over the last few years I've tried to do that a bit more, is where I try and understand the individual and get the best I can out of them.
Yeah, I think that the last time I was talking to you, that's what you'd move more towards, rather than the, you know, more understanding the players than the old school motivation of shouting at them.
I listen, every now and again something I need, maybe every so often, might happen once or twice a year at the most, that you'll go down their throat. It mightn't even happen that. Then there's times you'll just motivate them. So it is. But in general, I like talking. I like to see what's going on with someone. I like to understand where they're actually at, because that has a big... If you have a player that something has gone wrong outside of in his personal life, well, then if you can try and help him, he'll be in better form and he'll be looking forward more to getting out in the field and doing stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, have you sat down and analysed what happened Wexford last year? Obviously, you know, you've just mentioned, it wasn't the best year ever.
Yeah, listen, I have my thoughts on it. I'm pretty certain I have the reason why we didn't perform, but I'm not going to, I prefer even not talk about it myself personally, because then you're seen as an excuse. It is what it is. It's over. I think we've identified certain things, and we'll try and work on them for next year and try and be better.
Right, okay, so you have, like, you've sat down and discussed it with the players or whatever on a Zoom call, and you've gotten to the bottom of it.
Yeah, management, we've talked about Everton. Like, we don't go off from spending 3 or 4 years being very, very competitive in every single game. I think you can count in less than one hand how many, like, games we were on competitive in the 3 or 4 years previous to that, right?
Yeah.
So even in early 2020, Colm, in winning the Welsh Cup, we won 4 of our 5 National League games. And next thing, we weren't competitive at all. Like, yeah. There has to be a reason, right? So we think we've identified what it was. Not saying in 2021 we won't lose games, but I'd like to think we'll be back very competitive.
Yeah, it's definitely, there's no doubt when you paint the picture like that, I was thinking maybe expectations might have got too high based on the great performance last year. Because you look at it from the outside, Davey, when everyone saw the draw for the Wexford Club Championship, a lot of people were saying, geez, Davey's pulled a fast one there now. He'll have that hurling championship over nice and early and he'll get the lads in. And maybe, did you overdo the training?
No, it had actually nothing to do with that whatsoever. If you look at Wexford's situation, right, all my guys, the club championship in Wexford was actually really, really good. It was top draw, right? The lads, like, one of the things, and I just say it, is I thought the county would happen before the club, because I said, logically, it's easier to manage a group of 30 or 40 people in one county rather than manage every club team, right? So probably June or July, we were in unbelievable shape and did a great club championship. So that ended, I think, on the end of August, start of September. And we were getting back. We actually went back, I think, on the 14th of September. But what I didn't probably take into account as much was every single guy bar one on our panel plays football. So there'll be training 3 nights a week with the football after that.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to... I was not going to stop them doing what they wanted to do. Was I very worried that they'd train with me on a Tuesday, Thursday and Saturday and they'd be with their club Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday? I was. People thought we were trying to pull... There was no fast one, Colm. What it was, and this is to tell you the truth, was the hurling clubs got a chance to hurling 1 week after another, right? And you just take it. If you were playing hurling football, well, then you might have certain clubs gaining a massive advantage that mightn't have taken football serious or didn't play it serious, whereas other clubs would have. Whereas everyone had a level playing field and the quality of the hurling was unreal because it was week after week. And then for the football, it was the exact same. Level playing field and practicing your football week after week as well. So I think the county board tried to do the right thing. Did Davy Fitz, as much as people were saying, have a say in it? Not one bit did I have a say in it. And trust me, it didn't stand to Wexford as good as people thought it might have.
No, and if you're like, well, if you were to have a say in it next year, you'd put the hurling second, right?
You would, but if you put it second, like, I think you'd have to forfeit training to go back way longer, because I don't think you could do 7 days a week. I think that was a massive issue.
Yeah.
Like, you had missed 2 or 3 months of county training and you were trying to train club football and county hurling together, and I just think it's too much on the lads. I think it's overload. Believe it or not, I wouldn't be a person that would want to overload. I might overload in pre-season for 2 or 3 weeks. That's it.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't do it apart from that. I believe in freshness and wanting to get out there and enjoy your game and play it. So it certainly was a different 2020, so it was, you know. But I have to say I enjoyed the championship. I enjoyed watching the games.
So when the football championship came on then after the hurling, like, you realistically might only get them once a week then, would you?
So listen, you were getting them, but I didn't realise probably how much stuff they were actually doing. And then when they got to semi-finals and finals, they didn't want to train with you, and that was coming into in the September, start of October.
Yeah.
But I actually totally understand it, even though you're tearing your hair out at the time. So it was what it was. Listen, I don't blame the clubs. I understand it, even though I'd be trying to get the best for my side, but I wasn't going to flat take them on and say, no, you're not doing this or you're not doing that, you know?
Yeah, I saw Henry Shefflin said after the Wexford game that Wexford looked overcoached. Like, I mean, the opposite is probably true if you didn't have them in the lead up to the championship.
Yeah, you have your homework done on that. I was probably taken back a bit by Henry. He didn't do his homework. And when you're making comments, I think it's very important to do your homework. I don't think he had a clue what he was talking about. And I'd have massive respect for him as a person. But I was very disappointed in that. They weren't overcoached. That's for definite. I didn't get enough of what I wanted to get done when I'm done. But I tried to understand the club scene as much as I could. And you know what? Them lads are a great bunch, the Wexford boys. They'll give you everything, but they won't let down. They'll try and keep everybody happy. They don't want to let down their clubs either, and that's very important.
Yeah, I was trying to get to the bottom of the performance as well, Davey, and I was trying to say, oh, look, maybe the running game, the hard running game is more suited to the summer and things like that. But you've always had good leagues, so that probably doesn't add up either.
Oh, yeah, we have. As I said to you, I don't want to get into it. Like, we were poor, and that was it. I've talked to you about different things. It is what it is, and there's nothing we can do about it. And thankfully, in fairness, a lot of other counties, if you perform that badly, the public could give you a lot of stick. You'll get a small bit in Wexford, but in general, they're top class. And I'd love to see the ordinary GA supporter around the country be that way. We don't have to constantly dig at people and go at people all the time when they're not performing, you know?
Yeah. Have you thought about maybe tweaking systems or anything going into this year? You're in your fifth year now. Like, I was thinking a simple kind of tweak would be to use your centre back as the sweeper like other teams do instead of bringing back a forward.
And that's an old-fashioned thing, right? That's something that every team does, is they sit their six and they... Yeah. Like, I look at a lot of teams out there, Cullum, and they're playing sweepers. There's one particular team that's very successful and they've way more than one sweeper. They have a rake in their back line all the time. So they do. Of course you can sit a six. I do with my club every now and again. Have we looked at one or two things at Wexford? Yeah, we've looked at one or two things, but I love the way we play. We get 40 shots off a game. We get 7 and 8 up attacking a lot of the time. But we are looking, I'm always looking to see, can I do something different? I have one or two things in the head, and we've had a few management meetings over Zoom, and you know what, we're constantly looking, what can we do a bit different? I just love, if you can get 40 shots off in a game, that's unreal. And trying to come up with, okay, can we get more goal threats? I think in the Galway game, we had actually 3 goal chances in the first half. Didn't take them. And there were flicking decent chances, I'll tell you.
Yeah. But I suppose that's it. Like, I mean, the obvious change with you is that you'll bring a forward back to sweep, but your centre back marks. So you actually don't end up in any kind of different defensive shape than the other teams.
Yeah, well, you don't, right? That means that a lot of teams, like, will have their six straight away come back. My six doesn't have to go back straight away.
Yeah.
You have a lot of number 10, 11 and 12. Don't they get a lot of soft ball out the field? I can think of one team in particular that gets an awful lot of soft ball out the field. They don't like Dan Wexford because we won't let them do that. So you have different people thinking different ways, and I respect everyone and the way they think, but I also think they should respect the way we play as well and what we try and do.
Yeah, I think you've Niall Corcoran brought in now. Brendan Bugler stepped aside. He's just making babies at the moment, Davey, by the looks of things.
Yeah, congratulations to him. Stephen Joe had a child there. Yeah, which is, like he said to me, with the journey and the amount of time, like, I think he's hooked up a bar there, which is only 40 minutes down the road for him, and we wish him the best. Brendan's a super guy, great knowledge of stuff, and he'll be an asset. I think I'll work with him again in the future. Which I look forward to, but we have Niall in. Didn't take me too long to probably to pick Niall up, because I valued what he'd done with Leash. He's done a great job, and having talked to him, I met him there one day, Cullum, and the chat we had was incredible. I only went for 20 minutes, ended up probably an hour and a half or more with him, you know.
Right, so well, that's obviously important to be on the same wavelength. That's an important job, obviously, right?
Well, I think there's no point bringing in another coach or bringing in someone that sees the game completely different to how you'd see it. And the thing I love with Niall is he's open to Everton. He looks at Everton, and that's, I'm excited about working with a guy like that. That, okay, he's mad to learn, I'm mad to learn things off him, and we see the game pretty similar, and even where we think it can go, we're looking at as well, you know?
Yeah, so, like, I mean, because I thought I was watching Leash, like, they probably modelled their system a lot on Wexford's.
Well, we'd be pretty similar, so we would. We wouldn't be 100 miles away, and if you look at Leash in the last year or two, like, they've had some pretty good results. They've competed. I think the big thing was to get the Leashes of this world and other teams up competing. Like, I want Wexford to stay competing at the top table. Whether we win or not, we have to compete and be competitive.
Come here. One other thing I wanted to ask you was was another high profile thing during the year. Obviously, in the Clare game, there was someone in the stand giving you grief. Now, I don't want to get into what they were saying or anything like that, but did it distract you trying to watch the game?
Probably the first few minutes, I didn't honestly expect it. I didn't expect someone would stoop that low from my own county. Like, I played for 20 years, I've managed and won a lot with them. To say it was disgusting and rotten would put it mildly. Not classy. Disappointed Clare County Board didn't deal with it, but it is what it is, Cullum. It's grand to say forget about it, but I don't think it should be part of the game, and especially coming from my own county. And I know I've met a lot of people down in Clare, and they've said absolutely disgusted with it, and it shouldn't have been tolerated, but that's the way it is, and I suppose I'll just have to get over it.
Well, like, I mean, what I was wondering about that was this just like a personal issue with you from this fella, or do you think he was deliberately trying to put you off, you know, trying to concentrate on the game?
Well, the same fella would have done hurleys for every single game, and it's funny, the one game he didn't do was that one, so I don't know. I'm just disappointed in that. If you have to have someone out with someone, have a face-to-face and do it. I believe that. Listen, after the first few minutes, I grew tired of it anyhow. I didn't even bother me, but it's just disappointing. And I think even one Leash official came to me afterwards and he said, that was disgusting. He said, there's no place in our games for that kind of stuff. Right.
Did it cross your mind to bring it to the attention of the referee and get him sent out of there?
I actually said it to the fourth official, and he said to me, there's nothing I can do about it. I found that hard to believe. But that's what I was told. So it's funny, if you say a word to the referee or said even a tenth of what your man said to me, I'd be probably getting a ban for a few months.
Yeah.
And yes, everyone could hear that, and there are very few in the stadium, and it's okay. I'll get over it, but it's not right.
No, and nobody understands. So this has been, you know, sounding even louder.
Yeah, listen, you know what? It is. It's done now. If that's condoned by them people, that's fine. I'd like to think we'd never go down that route of doing something like that.
Yeah. Well, come here. To finish that game on a nice note, I saw you after the game, the cameras were on you and all the Clare lads came up and shook your hands. So, like, I mean, that was obviously a bad result, and the abuse that whoever you were getting was bad. But, like, I mean, that was I'm sure that was a nice moment for you, and maybe a bit of closure on that whole kind of Clare thing.
Yeah, well, I think you've seen me from day one. I've never said a bad thing about the Clare players, and I wouldn't. We had a lot of good times, Cullum. Like, we spent a lot of time together, and people wanted to make up X, Y, and Z. Would I keep every player on the Clare panel or even the Wexford panel happy? Not a hope. If you went into management with any team, you're not going to keep everyone happy, but I'd like to think in general, and I got a few messages off them even after that, even about the abuse, and it was pretty unreal. The text kept, and it's just, I'm so... Even the way it came up afterwards was really nice touch, and it was one I really, really appreciated. And I have nothing but respect for them guys. And even after that game, I texted a few of them wishing them the very best in the next game and really hope they did it. And I genuinely meant it. Like, I'm a Clare man at the end of the day. And I really hope them guys can get back to winning stuff under Brian Lohan.
Yeah, definitely. It's hard to believe a double All-Ireland winner and an All-Ireland winning manager would get abuse off somebody in his own county. Like, I mean, that might happen to me, but it doesn't make sense why somebody who's been so successful with a county would get abuse like that. It doesn't make, I just don't get it. Come here, before I let you go, because I know you're very busy. Ireland's Fittest Family, Davey. Very, very successful. I watch it and I enjoy it. I have an idea for you for a Christmas special, and it's called Ireland's Fittest Club. So you have GAA clubs, hurling, football, soccer, boxing, athletics, and they're all taking each other on in a fittest club. It's the very same format as Ireland's Fittest Family. It goes out at Christmas time. Me and you are going to do it. Pitch it to RTE there.
You're always thinking, bud. Not a bad idea, though. Not a bad idea. We could have some fun with that, so we do.
Because there's that natural competitiveness between all sports. Oh, we're better than you, you know?
I actually think something like that would be class now, I'll tell you the truth. And to do it maybe in the off-season and do it over a few days and have it knock out. Like, everybody loves the courses, Cullum. And, like, the thing about the courses is, you need another person. Like, if you're going over obstacles or if you're doing something, that you need the help. You need to structure it right. And I love where you have to think about doing something that you just can't rush in. Yes, you have to be fit, but also you have to use your mind. And if you look at a lot of sports, isn't the physical fitness and even the mental thinking, the mental fitness, that's so important as well, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. Right. Well, listen, I'll let you go. You have a think of that while you're driving in your car, and I'll leave it up to you to pitch it to RTE.
All right, listen, take care of yourself.
Thanks very much, baby. Talk to you.
Good luck.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year, year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. 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 There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I tell you, give us a year, year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
So Laoghaire Gael is back on TG Cahir tonight at 9:30, and this time it's Offaly legend Johnny Pilkington's turn. He joins us on the line now. Johnny, I've seen this show already. You haven't. It's fantastic. I don't know if it's because I was a teenager growing up in the 90s and have very, very fond memories of the 90s. I don't know what it is, but it's a brilliant show. Are you looking forward to watching it?
I'm in two minds looking at it. I haven't seen the show, so listen, thanks for saying that. It's been a very good show. There's a couple of videos there that are gone on the trailers, as you say, which make me cringe, which makes me feel, oh, why did I say that? But then when I think about it, I just say, listen, it's tongue in cheek and you know, a little bit of immature. But I mean, it was just something off the cuff as such. So There will be points there, I suppose, you know, that will make me cringe, and there'll be other points there that will actually, you know, I'll be very proud of. So interpretation, I suppose, is the word.
Well, that's it. Well, I suppose it'll be very nice for your children. Like, I mean, you talk about your children and coaching them towards the end of the show, and they're at an age now where they'll be really able to enjoy tonight's show, because I'm sure all the DVDs you've had from the 90s, if it's anything like me, they don't work in televisions anymore.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, it's a double-pronged sword, really, in terms of that, and training young people, and I have been involved with teens at underage, and they haven't seen me play, and they're only hearing rumours that their parents are telling them.
Yeah.
And so they're going down there, and they're kind of looking up at me. And then you have these two kind of couple of tips from you speaking before matches, and you're making a right easy go with yourself. So that, you know, I'd wonder if they'll actually take me serious at all. So, so you know, but that's That's the character, that's the nature of me anyway, and hopefully it'll show both sides that there is that serious side and that kind of tongue-in-cheek, just, you know.
Yeah.
Taking the game in serious, you know.
Well, that's the thing, and like, I mean, you say you cringe at the interviews. The one that goes out in the promo, and it's a brilliant, brilliant clip for the promo. It's where Dahi Regan sets up the scene of Gary Kirby being asked before the 94 All-Ireland what it would mean to the people of Limerick. And he talks about the battle against rugby and, you know, aspiring to young children. And you say, you're asked the same question and you say it would mean a hell of a lot of drinking. Like, I mean, I don't know why you'd cringe at that, Johnny. Like, you're clearly laughing. Like, you actually laugh after you say it.
Yeah, that's it. You know, it's tongue in cheek. So I suppose, really, you know, in my own point of view and in my own kind of game, I mean, there are all those serious issues and this, that, and the, you know, in terms of our competition with other sports, in terms of, you know, the way young people aspire to be and that. But, you know, hurling is only just that small little bit of part of your life, and there's just, and it's supposed to be enjoyment for you.
Yeah.
And if you kind of go in and take it into all this, the be all and end all of it, you know, well, then you'll be under an awful lot of stress in your life. So listen, just go out, play the game, have the crack, have the enjoyment after. Like, I mean, the match itself is only kind of a small part of it, and the enjoyment we would have got would have been straight after the match, in amongst the friends that have the same like mind and that. And, you know, the gaff thing about it is in all of those areas, you know, we didn't really talk too much about hurling, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, you did kind of portray the image of, you know, not taking it all too seriously. And, like, you know, Michael Deignan said on the show that, like, you were very, very serious about it. That was kind of that kind of happy-go-lucky, you know, character. And you like to go for a pint the night before a match. Dahi Regan said that was because of nerves. You know, like, I mean, was that just something you wanted to do yourself? Was it nerves? Was it, you know, just trying to get out of the house?
Yeah, I think it did help. I think it helped me in a big way. I was fairly, you know, a nervous person in terms of that. If you go to any individual sport, I'm playing golf at the moment, give me a 2 foot putt and I can guarantee you I'm a bag of nerves. And you know, if I had a little bit in the bag there to kind of just get a swig of it, just to kind of calm it. So yeah, it did help. It definitely did help in terms of the 3 or 4. You went home and you had your sleep, you know. I suppose the other thing is that I didn't hide it, and I didn't hide the fact, listen, I was a smoker and that, and I didn't hide that. You know, you hear of lads and right throughout there that they go off to some other town or whatever, or some other county, and have the 3 or 4 or that, you know. So I didn't. I said, listen, I do it out in the open. There's no major issue with that. On top of that, when you kind of put in the old, you know, the tongue-in-cheek and the smart one-liners and that, you know, and it all kind of is in the package and it all kind of comes. But, you know, when you think about it, that's all the package of me, you know. There's the both the serious side and there is that. And I would, you know, at the time, you know, even going to the matches, going up on buses and that, you know, I'd be down at the back of the bus now. And that time, you know, 4 or 5 lads would be smoking in the team, you know. And there could be even 10, and especially in the bar lads, we seem to 5 or 6 seem to smoke. So you'd be down at the back. I would be rabbiting on the back of the bus from 9:30 in the morning until we go up to the thing, about nothing. And I'd say the likes of John Fry and the likes of Joy and all these guys, they'd say to get off the bus and say, what is that lad after talking about for the last kind of 2 hours, you know? But it was just nerves, you know. And then kind of, you know, when we used to get to the Spa Hotel, and, you know, you'd get off that bus and then you'd have your food, the sandwiches at that time, it wasn't pasta or anything like that, cup of tea and sandwiches, and there was a team meeting and the whole lot, and then the focus really came on, you know. So
yeah, it's funny that you were so nervous though, Johnny, because you never looked like you were nervous on the field, or did the nerves go on the field? Because, like, it was just all action style, almost like where you attacked the game rather than played like you looked like you were nervous.
I think it's the case with everybody in a game, in terms of, I was very fortunate in terms of I was at the throwing, and you're in it straight away. So the ball is thrown in and you know, so you get, but everybody is. And I think just the, you know, even in the dressing room, I try to get through to people, and it's kind of funny in terms of all the teams that have been involved in. And I've often said to them, I don't know how you're going to prepare mentally for this. I've done it each and every single way you can think of. I've done it the right way and the wrong way and the whole lot. And just one day, you know, it's just this mental focus. And I think it actually kind of starts maybe on the Sunday prior to it.
Yeah.
But once the ball is thrown in, that's gone. And it's just concentration, I presume, kicks in and said, listen, you're looking at the game, you're looking at where the ball is going and where you're hoping to be next and that. So, you know, it's the same for everybody that's there. It's the same for, you know, Shane Lowry when he plays golf or any of the Six Nation boys there when they're going out against Wales on Sunday. You know, they're going to, you know, that. But once that ball is kicked in, you know, you just tune into kind of where's the ball, how do I get onto them back, you know?
Yeah, you must have been very naturally fit to be able to have the few pints and, you know, like, I mean, two or three before a match. I think before the 94 All-Ireland, you had 7 or 8 pints at a wedding. That wasn't in the show now. I saw that in a different interview. But like in the laps and all, like we would have done in the 90s, like I'm sure you would have been winning all of them. You'd have been naturally athletic.
I was, yeah. Like that was the more fortunate. That's the one thing that I was blessed with, you know, in terms of that. There was two things. One, I was naturally fit. I had a natural, you know, running ability. And the other thing is that I never had any injuries. I never pulled a muscle, yeah, really. I think I had a slight strain one year, this and the other. So I had that natural ability and that all helped. So, you know, whereas a few other lads on it, you know, did look at anything. They were always having to lose a pound or a stone or two and that. I didn't have any of those issues, you know. So,
yeah. You went on some... Yeah, it was lucky for you, especially the injury stuff. You went on some run, Johnny, from the 94 Leinster. You won the 94 All-Ireland. And that was the greatest ending to an All-Ireland final in the history. And, well, that's my opinion anyways. Like that'll never be seen again. Then you're club captain. You win a county title. You win the Leinster club title as captain. You win the All-Ireland title as captain. And then you come back into Offaly and you're Offaly captain. And you win the Leinster with Offaly. And then you're in the All-Ireland final in 95.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sure. Listen, it's just the way, I suppose. If you started, say, in 94, I don't know how 94 could gone. I would have been the person even saying, listen, that, you know, we're going to win the All-Ireland this year, you know, far from it.
Yeah.
And even up to that, you know, even up to that Kilkenny game in the semi-final, there wasn't anything to suggest that there was anything on a roll in terms of, you know, what was going to happen.
Right.
But again, it kind of comes back down to, you know, I don't know if we were any fitter in 94 than we were in 93. We lost to Kenny in the semi-final in 93 by, you know, kind of a last-minute goal or that, you know. And in 92, we had brought to Kenny to, you know, we were winning by 6 points halfway through the second half. And next thing, Christy Heffernan comes on and turns the game on the head, you know. So our focus would have been on the Kenny game. And then we just hop onto a buzz. And I just felt that in 95, in that Kilkenny team, there's 15 kind of individuals that just clicked on the day and that everything. And I think it epitomizes the second goal that Offaly got there, Joe Dooley got it, and the way it went. It went from a sideline into, I think, John Try into Billy Dooley into Joe Dooley. And it was practice. But it, you know, and it just kind of kicked off then after that, really, and it went on. Obviously, listen, the last 5 minutes was kind of remarkable and that, you know, in terms of what happened. Not so much the two goals, but I think with the 4 or 5 points afterwards, it was the more astonishing thing, you know.
Like
after that, you know, again, you see, Ben Hanamy was captain in 94, and for Clare and teams, you know, and say, let me get the moment of Declan Hannan, like, I mean, We had Martin Hanamy. Martin Hanamy was a top class captain, you know. I mean, in terms of, he was over a bunch of, he was the lad in the middle, in terms of, you had all us, which were all minor stars, if you wanted to call us, after winning all Ireland medals, you know, at minor level and a couple. Martin didn't have that. He didn't have the AFL experience where, say, Jim Troyer, this, that, and that. So he was the kind of the rock of sense. The lad there that was kind of leading us all. Now, Eamon Keegan, I'd definitely say Martin didn't want it in the second after 94, after going around with the cup and all of that. And generally, he's a kind of a shy man as well, you know. So
right.
If Martin didn't want it, like, Martin should have really been captain right throughout his career, actually, with Offaly. There would have been no issue with him. And we might have had a little bit more than we did. But, so, you know, when it came to captaincy of Offaly next year, I always feel that I was the next in line on the field. Now, off the field, I would have been the last person to report. All right. But on the field, when they come to it, actually, I was always on the team sheet.
Yeah.
I was never injured, you know. There was better Brian Whelan, Johnny Dooley, and John Try were all kind of better and more influential hurlers than I was, but they were a year or two younger, you know, that kind of way.
Right.
So
right.
The older lads, the likes of Joe Dooley and Dignan and that, who would have been in Lineford, they'd be in and out of injuries as well, you know. So now maybe him and Creedon turned around and said, listen, I put this down, and this will kibosh him, and he'll kind of concentrate an awful lot more on it, and he'll do things right. So that kind of backfired on him, really, in a way.
Well, that was it. But was a part of you going, Jesus, this is a huge honour, and another part of you going, oh, Jesus, now I'm really going to have to pull up my socks?
No, I don't. Listen, you know, I think, you know, I barely remember the day that Eamon Creegan actually told me that I was captain. I said, yeah, grand. I don't bear much terms on the captaincy. And even, you know, when I'm above the teams and I pick a team, I pick the lad, you know, that's going to do his job on the field.
Right.
And, you know, again, I'm coming back to Martin Hanamy, you know, very, very rarely put a foot wrong in a match. Very tough, kept it very simple. You know, you'd be a training with Martin Hanamy and you'd have to, you know, you go out in the field and you'd be poking the ball across him. And this lad is burying the ball at you. And, you know, when he puts in a training, it's always 100%. Now, off the field, didn't bother him at all. He'd go for his 2 pints as well. It didn't make any difference, you know. So, in that kind of regard, you know, they say, listen, I'm a midfielder. Listen, lads have to do their own thing here. Eamon Creegan or management do their job. Players do their job. What does the captain really do, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, actually, the only kind of things I had with kind of captaincy would have been with club level, where maybe a player was dropped off the team or dropped off, you know. And I know that in 95, one of our players, we played corner back and he was dropped for the All-Ireland semi-final. And, you know, you were going to the door, back over to him just to kind of say, listen, you know, it's not as bad. Listen, come on to the match. He didn't want to. You know, obviously it was a big blow for him.
Yeah.
Whereas in the county level, I don't think, well, maybe other captains are different, I don't know. But that's the way I did it. I don't know.
Well, I think maybe Offaly had an awful lot of leaders on that team that the captain wasn't, you know, as maybe stand out. Doughty Regan was saying on the show beyond tonight that the 95 loss hit you hard. It took you a while to get over it. And you made a funny comment about it, saying it's because of Anthony Daly clear lifting the cup, like you've seen it thousands of times since.
Yeah. Well, again, I suppose there's two things on it. I mean, you know, I don't really dwell on the loss. I mean, you know, right, we lost in All-Ireland. I mean, and the game itself, I did okay in the game itself. So, and I think I've said it before there that actually, and Doughty would be a prime example. I mean, you know, Doughty had a fantastic game in 95, but he was absolutely diabolical in 94. And he doesn't appreciate the medal actually really in 94 because his performance wasn't in it. So
yeah.
I think, you know, like performance in the thing would be, like, I think any lad coming out of the field, if the performance isn't there, that's worse than actually the result. And I think just as you say, in 95, by the time we came back around to the club championship in 95, we were after doing the intercount there, after winning the club in 95 and in thing and the red in 18 months. And I suppose it was in the modern day, it's called burnout. And you're just kind of fed up with the whole lot of it, you know?
Yeah, you just need a little bit of a mental break.
A little bit of a mental break is right, and just kind of get away from it. And again, of course, in 95, so at that stage, you're 25, and so listen, you're drinking pints, and you're going here, and you're saying to yourself, listen, the club championship is coming on us, so listen, what about it? Should we deal with it? And we're just going through it. Whereas, you know, all it was maybe, listen, a month or you know, maybe 2 months at that stage, just to, you know, down the tools and come back at it again in January, you know.
How do you feel looking back at the run-in with Babs that time now, the sheep in a heap? You obviously had the last laugh. I didn't realise, I don't remember the interview after the final where you were interviewed at the banquet and you said, we're not a bad old flock, we're not a bad old flock at all. That was a brilliant, I suppose you can look back on that laughing now, whereas if it hadn't turned out the way you did, you know, you would have probably another completely different opinion on it.
No, like, I'm supposed to be older, and well, I am older, but whether I'm any wiser or not, I don't know. I don't know. No, I look back at it, and it's just the circumstances that it kind of what it brought to it. And that, you know, I've said it before. I was coming home in a car after the Leinster final. Now, our performance in the Leinster final wasn't marvelous, you know, and right. It wasn't a classic game by any chance or by any marketing. But we did okay, and I mean, we didn't really deserve to lose. I know Kilkenny got two goals in there from two frees, which was 6 points. I think we could have been two or three points ahead, and I think we got a goal from a 21-yard free, and I think, you know, a couple of minutes after that, we got another 21-yard free, and even the ball just barely crossed the line, you know. So we missed an awful lot of opportunities, and we didn't play particularly well. So I was in the car, actually, with a couple of friends of mine on the way down, and it just seemed to be on that 6-1 news, 1:30. And I was just saying to myself, you know, he's just, you know, going away from that, you know, taking the responsibility. It was all those lads out there. This is all I can remember. I can't even remember the sheep and heap remark, but it was all a case of they're not doing what they were told, and they were at the problem, you know. Whereas the kind of, you know, a manager, you know, now Babs earlier on in the season also had a little issue with us because I think one of the Offaly arranged a challenge match with Tipperary down in Torres, and we were after playing club championships at the same weekend. So it was on a Sunday in April, and I think a kind of a league final could have been on in Torres, and we were playing the far side of Torres. So half of them didn't bother going anyway because we were after playing club championships. And the ones that did, half of them got stuck on the way down, you know. So it ended up with a Mickey Mouse team down playing. And Baz was furious about that. And that made the news as well. And one of the comments on the news is, oh, this wouldn't happen in Tipperary. And this will only happen in the likes of Offaly and Westmeath. And if you want to kind of call it the second tier hurlers and that, you know. So I was kind of heartened with the whole generalization of his comments then. So, you know, you went home there and we had a few pints that night. And listened to talk was on it as well, I think it is. Next morning anyway, Liam Horne rang me on that, you know, and I was still in the same form, still in the same frame of mind, you know, I didn't bother. I'm still in the same frame of mind to this day. Which is what it is. But I remember we went back into Whelan's pub, of course, that, you know, the Monday after Leinster final around 5:00, and the lads were kind of giving elbows now on the thing. And I remember just talking to Johnny and Joe Dooley, he's very ready to see the paper tomorrow morning. and that was it. Now, you know, look back and it was grand. I don't know what happened between, in all fairness to our county board chairman, you know, there was no, like, I mean, how come Bab didn't come in and sort this out in the dressing room on the Tuesday night? You know, why wasn't it even a meeting call to that? I don't know.
Do you think, Johnny, Babs wanted out at that stage? Like, I mean, you mentioned a challenge game, but like, was there tension there? You know, had things not been going well under him?
No, I don't think there was tension actually in it at all. I mean, I don't think actually the Offaly players really didn't do tension as such. We kind of plotted along and we kind of went along. And I mean, in all fairness to the whole setup, I just felt that two things. Babs had Johnny Murray, who was a selector. Now, we were doing, you know, unusual running, I put it, in terms of in April and May, in terms of the hard kind of slogan that you would normally do in January, February. That right. was continuing on until May and June, you know. So, you know, we were quite happy we were doing this all right, you know. And there wasn't anything from my side, that maybe one or two lads went up to Babs and said, listen, you know, we need to be doing more hurling here. But there wasn't. The results prior to that wasn't any different than any other years from my memory and that, you know. Right. But Bob, at the same time, wasn't really engaged with us, you know. The couple of things there that it just didn't seem to... And to be honest with you, I've been involved with teams myself and half-hearted or only kind of, you know, three quarters in it. And, you know, it wasn't that he was doing kind of anything wrong, but I just felt there that, you know, that engagement wasn't there like other managers would be. You know, we had John McIntyre, I think, came in after or before him in 97 and very enthusiastic, and, you know, he was pushing lads and doing all the right things, and you know, it just didn't happen either for John McIntyre in terms of a performance in Leinster the year before. It wasn't hectic either. So. But I just felt that he wasn't 100%, you know, you right. have to say, you know.
And I suppose the big one from looking from the outside that I have been reading is that he tried to move you away from ground hurling. I suppose ground hurling would have been a big part of your game.
It was, and I suppose, nearly a big part of it. But I think, actually, when you take a look at it, is that, you know, every manager brings his own style of play that he's played in play. And it was that, I was looking at, you know, the 1973 All-Ireland, after, you know, a few years after Raymond Cregan went to that. And I just couldn't get over the similarities between that Limerick 73 team and our own team. And it was moved ball. And Eamon Cregan, obviously, was a very good tactical hurler, skillful hurler in that. And that Limerick team were moving the ball and moving it well. Now, Offaly were doing that as well. And that has been our game in terms of move that ball, move it quickly into the full forward line and crisscross it. And I go back to that. Brian Cody actually once commented, he says, listen, playing against Offaly, you just don't know where the ball is coming from.
Right.
Now, the way I feel about it is the Tipperary style of hurling is, listen, we get the ball in our half forward line and we pick out our full forward line. So we kind of hold it up there in that middle of the field and we look up. And he was bringing that style. He was bringing the Tipperary style to Offaly.
Right. Know?
And I think actually Eamon O'Shea had an article in a paper there not too long ago, and I thought it was a very valid point. I mean, you know, you can't take the spirit out of the county. Each county has all different kind of little styles. If you go to Galway, it's a physically strong running style that they have, and that's what they're doing. Kilkenny, direct, let's pump it up there, put it in high, you take Cody, that's the way he hurls, that's the way he had his team. Offaly was kind of similar to Cork. We move a ball and move it quickly. And Tipperary were kind of more hold it up and we'd be physical and take on the man, you know?
Right.
I think that's where he kind of, you know, he was bringing his knowledge of hurling and not combining with the Offaly knowledge of hurling, you know?
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, every county has their own kind of style. You call the 98 All-Ireland the People's All-Ireland. Is that, I suppose that is fair enough. You wouldn't have won it without the people. There must have been a huge feeling of unity within the county after winning that one.
There was, yeah. I mean, you know, really declared, yeah. I mean, you know, there's no doubt about it. I mean, the day in Turles, and I don't know if the ball, I got a bit emotional actually even talking about coming back into the square.
Yeah,
in Turles, and that, you know, why are you doing that? You're easy, child, you know. But yeah, I mean, a very special day was the clear thing, but the fact, you know, I don't think, right, and I definitely say, I don't think it would have been pursued if you didn't have the sit down, you know, and I think it would have been brushed under the carpet, probably, or said, well, listen, we're going to go with the referee's report or whatever, and it was an unusual thing, it was an unusual feat. And that, you know. So definitely it was. And I think the homecoming, actually, I think, you know, the people of Offaly felt part of it, you know, more so than anything. Then, you know, it's just not a team. Everybody was responsible, you know. So
yeah.
There's a great little story, actually. You know, I have a brother-in-law from Kildare. And Kildare and Kerry were playing in the under-21B final afterwards. And so crowd went in the Saturday on the field anyway, and he came back to Bar anyway, and he turns around and he was sitting at home with my own parents, whatever, and he says, joking, he says, oh, I'm disgusted there with you, Offaly, he was sitting on the field, and I went up to look at hurling All-Ireland, you know, thing. And he big laugh, so he said, listen, Asher, if you have a problem, write to the GA and complain that you never got to see your big Kildare hurlers or whatever, you know. He wrote to the co-pair. He sent them back two tickets for the Kildare football match in 98, which would have been a sold out then for the following week. So he was happy enough then that he didn't get to see Kildare others, so he got to see Kildare, beloved Kildare footballers all because of Offaly sitting on the field.
Is it funny? Paul Galvin actually was hurling with Kildare against Kerry, I think, in that
That's
game.
Right.
Paul Galvin was hurling for Kerry that day, which was a good one. He was telling me there recently. Yeah. Come here, a couple of funny ones there before you go. You gave up smoking when you retired. I thought that was a classic, Michael Deignan was saying.
Yeah, it just so happened actually, about a year after, I had to just give it up. I don't know. It's just the way it worked out. Listen, I suppose the cigarettes do have an issue with it, but smoking, there was a lot of people smoking at that time, and the whole lot. I think Serge Blanco used to smoke 40 or 50 cigarettes a day as well. But yeah, it just so happened. Myself and a couple of friends there, we got together, and thankfully two of us are still off them. And, you know, a third lad went back on them after 2 or 3 years. So yeah, it just so happened out, John.
Zinedine Zidane was another smoker in the World Cup in 98. So it was all in the, it was all the vogue maybe back then. And would you how big of a smoker were you? Would you need one at half time? You know, what are you looking at?
Well, it's not so much the things are actually habits and that, you know, in terms of it was a smoker. When you kind of came up first onto the Offaly thing, like, you know, you'd go into the dressing room and Jim Try would be sitting there. And Jim Try, of course, is another smoker, you know. But, you know, obviously, you know, when you're starting off, you're kind of hiding the fact that you're not going to smoke in the dressing room, whereas Jim Try would be puffing away, you know. As time went on, it was only kind of manners there that they went into the toilet, they went into the shower, the two or three lads, and you'd be having a puff, you know, and that, you know. So, actually, one of the, you know, the Leinster final, one of them I went in, actually, and... I had the usual, you take your cigarette out of the pocket and the lighter and that, and you went in and you had a quick smoke and a chat with a couple of lads. And so, you know, it's only easy to do it in. Put the cigarette lighter in the sock and went off. Anyway, came back out to the meeting, or the half-time talk was going on or whatever. Back out onto the field, played away anyway. And the craft came back in, took off the sock, and here the cigarette lighter fell over. So, But it was something I was smoking at that time. I picked it up actually at 16, stupidly, like everything, and finished up with them, and thanks to God, I'm awesome.
Okay, and come here, to finish up, you retired at 30. Like, I mean, especially you're so athletic and you're so fit. You know, was that just getting tired of the whole thing? Like, physically, I'm sure you, with no injuries, you could have stayed going.
Well, of course, you see, all right, my natural ability and my lifestyle then started, well, you know, at 30, you know, the natural thing, you know, the legs get that little bit slower and the pace. Now, it's actually gas, you know, when you think of, like, you know, you start off in the middle of the field, or I started off in the middle of the field, and I was going up and down the field. Like, I remember playing in the Leinster final in 1990, and I was going from 21 to 21, and actually, Richie Power's father, who was on, stood between the 265s. I think he had 3 points scored, and, you know, standing between the 265s. And whereas I was going up busy all day doing nothing, you know. And as you get experience, you begin to say, well, listen, I'm not going to run there because, you know, there's no need. That'll come back out to me. So then people think you run out of steam, and then you're moved.
Right.
You know? So when you get the experience, you're moved out of the middle of the field because you're not running enough and that, you know. So, but again, at 30, you know, I finished up in 2001, which is, you know, short of my 31st thing. I suppose I felt there when I went back and the selector, Pat Malotny, asked me at kind of around Christmas time or just forward in 2000, listen, was I going to go back for another year? And I said, listen, it's like this. If we draw Kilkenny, I will. Because I said, listen, if we can beat Kilkenny in 2000, we've a good shot at it. We were after getting well hockeyed by Kilkenny in the All-Ireland previous. We did beat Cork all right, you know. I would have fancied ourselves against the likes of Wexford and that. But Kilkenny were the big ones. So they came out there and the better. So that was kind of that. I suppose looking back on it, you know, this is then at the stage where you have to kind of mind yourself. You have to kind of make the sacrifices. And other little things, I remember talking to actually DJ Carey about 5 or 6 years afterwards, you know, or 3 or 4 years after, actually, you know. And he was talking, listen, at this stage he was doing Pilates and that, you know. And, you know, no one kind of ever said that to me in terms of that, you know. So he was doing that to prolong the body and the whole lot. But saying that as well, listen, you know, I just didn't have the hunger then either, you know, right. And I think you need that bit of hunger. And the same happened with my own club. Like, I mean, the hunger just went out of the club then, just, you know, in around 2004, where I was 33, 34. Now at this stage, I'm about 2 stone overweight.
You're at full forward at that stage, are you?
I moved in there into full forward at that stage, but at this stage now, the training wasn't doing anything. I was after putting on the weight, and of course maybe the fact that I went off to see the rest put it on as well, and the running wasn't there. But again, you know, just when I think about it, you were getting up after a training session, especially in 2000, the next morning, and there was a soreness and a stiffness there, you know, after the night's training session, you know. So again, the recovery, which would have been none at that time. And now it's such an important part of it, of the game, you know, it just wasn't there. So, you know, you could have put on another 2 or 3 years there doing the recovery sessions, easing off a bit and running and that. But, I mean, you know, I had probably enough of success anyway at that stage and kind of maybe fed up with Ireland as well.
I think if you're already getting to the stage where you're getting fed up of it and you have to do recovery sessions and all that kind of stuff, you'd be fairly quickly made fed up of it if you want to start doing all of that.
I think, you know, maybe the team was breaking up as well and all that.
Well, that was a big thing.
Yeah. All factors. And yeah. The one thing is that I never regretted actually, finishing. I was never one that, geez, I should have held on for another 2 years or 3 years or this, that and the other. And I wasn't going to be one of those players, these impact subs, you know, because they work about maybe 1 in 10. You come on 10-1 and you'll score that winning goal or whatever. And then you'll come on the next 9 games and you won't hit a ball. So I wasn't going to be that kind of an impact sub either, you know. For me, so.
Yeah, no, I don't think that's for anyone. Come here, listen, Johnny, thanks very much for doing the show. I hope you enjoy it and look back on incredible times in the 90s. Maybe in the pub when people come in, you know, you do that anyways, do you? Would you have people in looking to talk about matches the whole time where you're having to go do the nostalgia talks all the time?
I've listened to a few people who come up and that, and, you know, I suppose sometimes it gets tiring in terms of, oh, we're not going through 98 again, or, you know, and especially, generally, it can be the same kind of lad asking about it and that, you know. But it's nice to talk to people that you don't know about it, and it's nice that they actually appreciate it. Like, I mean, you know, I've even just talking to my own brother-in-law, and he's from Tipperary, and he came down around that time in 98 and that. And, you know, people around the town here, and it's the enjoyment of going to Croke Park, of going to these big matches, and the enjoyment afterwards. And I suppose what we don't realise is that how much of a pleasure and how much of memories that we give to people. You know, I remember just talking to a pub owner in Burr, and, you know, he was saying, and actually won the All-Ireland in 1980, the pubs didn't close for 3 months. You know, and they remember it and that, you know. And it's the same. Like, I mean, we just had a fantastic time with actually going to our big games and also Burr as well with all these big and, the, you know, replays and all that. So it was a great time and there was great parties and there was great crack with them, so.
Great time. I enjoyed them immensely and I'm a Laois man, so that's saying a lot, Johnny. Come here, thanks very much for doing the show, Johnny. Again, remind everyone, it's Laois Regale tonight at 9:30. So hope you all enjoy it. Johnny, thanks very much.
Thank you, Nicola. My job. Bye.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through, but it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.